broadcasting live from the Georgia World Congress Center in Atlanta, Georgia, for the 2017 ATD International Conference and Exposition. It's time for Learning Insights, brought to you by Training Pros.
All right, Lee Cantor, Stone Payton, back with you from the trade show floor of 2017 ATD. We have with us in this segment Lee from Giant Leap Consulting, the Chief Encouragement Officer, Mr. Bill Treasurer. Good morning, sir.
Stone, it's good to be with you. Lee, it's good to be with you, and it's great to be here at the Georgia World Congress Center.
So, Bill, are you here today speaking? Are you here attending? What are you doing here in town?
I'm doing both. I'm speaking today at 1 o'clock. I'm talking about the value of getting humbled, and I'm also exhibiting. I'm in booth 929 with my company, which is Giant Leap Consulting.
And what are you doing for folks at Giant Leap Consulting?
You know, we're a courage-building company. We help people and organizations get stellar results by being more courageous and driving out fear. So we're a courage building company.
And how'd you get in this business?
You know, you have to rewind. I've had the business for 15 years, and before I had this company, Giant Leap, we've worked with some pretty famous, you know, clients like Saks Fifth Avenue and Hugo Boss and NASA and the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Pittsburgh Pirates, and pretty cool clientele. But before all of this, I worked for a company called Accenture, one of the world's largest management consulting companies. Before that, I worked for a company called Executive Adventure and another company, which was a boutique leadership company called High Performing Systems. But before all of that, I was a professional high diver, and I used to dive from 100-foot platforms into small pools for a living with the U.S. high diving team.
Okay, how does one know if they're good at something like that before it's too late to find out that you're not?
Yeah, there's only like, you can only make a mistake once.
Ay-yi-yi.
I was a springboard diver in college and in high school, and then I became a member of the U.S. high diving team and traveled all around the world performing in aquatic entertainment productions, diving from heights that scale to 100 feet, traveling at speeds in 50 miles an hour before hitting a small pool that was 10 feet deep. But I'm a high diver who's afraid of heights. So it was in discovering my own courage that I decided to make a courage building company to help people take whatever metaphorical high dives they're facing. And it became the metaphor of my business, and it's called Giant Leap Consulting because I used to take giant leaps for a living.
So now you also have a book, right?
I've got four books, and the book that's out right now is called A Leadership Kick in the Ass. Can I say that on the radio?
Yes, you can.
you just did.
It's called A Leadership Kick in the Ass, and it's about the importance of transformational humiliating events as the entry point of humility.
You strategically chose to put the word ass in the title. What was the thinking there?
Well, originally the book was called Leadership is Freaking Hard. But with the publisher and I in conferring, we decided that the book needed to be a little bit more edgy and punchy, and we realized
freaking wasn't edgy enough.
Freaking wasn't didn't have it, and so we decided that when you have these events, the more we talked about these actual events in our own life, these humiliating experiences that level us, we would come back to the word ass kick. We're like, oh, that situation just kicked my, and then we'd say it.
Right.
So we're like, you know, maybe we should call the book that. So I put it by a number of people, but most importantly, I put it by my 81-year-old mother.
To get her approval.
And I said to my mom, who's a New Yorker, I said, Mom, you know, they want me to put the word ass in the title. And she said, let's face it, Billy, ass isn't much of a swear word anymore. So I got her permission.
Does she... she voiceovers the audiobook?
She ought to. She ought to. But there is an audio version, but she's not in it.
So now, in your work, why are confidence and humility so important to effective leadership?
You know, I've worked with thousands of leaders in the 20 years that I've been in this business. And what I have found is that the leaders that we most admire have a wonderful combination of two things. We want leaders who are confident, who know where they're going, have a solid sense of direction, have resolve, and have backbone. We want leadership confidence. But we also want a leader who knows what their root system is, who can look us eyeball to eyeball and treat us one to one and not lord over us. We want a leader who has grace, So we want a leader to be confident, but we want that confidence to be anchored to humility. And that's the sweet spot. If you can give me both as a leader, not just confidence and not just humility, but the blend of both, that's what we want in a leader. But unfortunately, we tend to find that a leader has either one of those in too much abundance.
Are there some tricks or tips that you can share that help a leader walk that tightrope?
It's a balance point, and sometimes you don't feel the balance point or aren't able to discern it until after you've had that butt-kicking moment that levels you and then causes you to really rethink, who do I want to be as a leader? So I guess the one tip I would say is, you know, start a leadership journal and think back to those moments in your own career that leveled you and what you learned from it and how you grew from it, and decide, who is the leader that I would like to be led by? Not, am I an emanation of one of my parents coming out of my body? Not, am I one of the leaders who led me in the past? But who am I going to be as a leader? And would I be proud to have been led by the leader that I am today? So I think answering questions like that are important.
Now, does it take kind of analyzing these transformative humiliations or these tough times that you went through as the jumping off point to be better, or can you learn from the successes that you've had as well?
Well, I think that you definitely can learn from your successes. I think, though, that leadership as a concept gets seductive because we treat leaders special. We give them more office space. We give them the extra parking spot. We give them behavioral latitude. We let them get away with interrupting. We let them get away with coming late to the meeting. And so it becomes seductive. And after a while, you start to think that you're special because you're a leader. And that's when you're setting yourself up for the next butt kick. So I think that your successes can teach you something, but they can also blind you to your own limitations.
Now, shouldn't you treat different people differently?
Well, I think that, that's a philosophical question, right? It's egalitarian, certainly in the United States, this idea of all men are created equal. And the truth is, I do believe in meritocracy, right? I do believe in the presumption of the dignity of the person in front of me. But what I find is that the leaders who go out of their way to sort of remove the starstruck that you may feel in their presence, because a lot of times when you're in the presence of a leader, you start feeling diminished. You start feeling like they're special. You put them on a pedestal to yourself, even if they're not doing it. So the leaders who work extra hard to look you directly in the eye, they bring yourself down to their level. And I think that a levelless leader, it can be a powerful leader.
Now, you mentioned the need to be loyal rebels. What does that mean?
Well, I think that when you get confidence and humility in equal measure, in that balance point, I think that it allows you to be, and I think it's important, it's incumbent upon a leader to be a loyal rebel, meaning you have to have some degree of loyalty to the agency you serve. You have to have loyalty to the organization you're a part of, or even to the party that you're a part of. We want loyalty, and that's good to be loyal, but we don't want people to be blindly loyal and just toe the party line all the time. We want to make sure that our leaders have a sense of their own independence of thought. So I think it takes both confidence and humility. The confidence to have an independent idea and walk outside of the party line if your actions are going to be rebellious but serve the party itself. So can I give you a small example of that?
Absolutely.
So there was a boss that I had at Accenture, a good guy named Heinz Brannon. He's still a mentor to me today after 20 years ago that I worked for him. Heinz became the managing partner of the Charlotte office after the person who was formerly in that role went on to become the CEO of Accenture, a guy named George Shaheen at the time. And George had a management practice of every Saturday he would get the partners and associate partners and have a partner meeting on Saturday. After they had been traveling all week and away from their family, he wanted them to get together on Saturday for a half day so he could check in, right?
So couldn't check in Monday through Friday.
Exactly. So Heinz Brannon, in his first official act as the managing partner of the Charlotte office, gathered everybody on their Saturday meeting and said, before we start the meeting, I want to welcome you. I'm the new managing partner. And oh yeah, here's my first official act as managing partner of Charlotte. We will have no more Saturday meetings. This is your last Saturday meeting. What do you think those people did?
They said, we're going to have them on Sunday.
They literally stood up and clapped.
Right?
And so that's the idea of being a loyal rebel. He was being rebellious. That system of having Saturday partner meetings was pretty widespread, although it wasn't a formal thing. But he was also being rebellious out of loyalty to them and loyalty to the company, because he realized by treating them well and giving them the time to be with their families, they'd be way more productive during the weekday. So that's the idea of being a loyal rebel.
And it's focusing on the outcome he desires rather than the system that he was part of.
Exactly. He was focusing on, he was doing the right thing, which is not easy for a leader to do. And he had the backbone, the confidence to do it, but the humility to realize that he was doing it for the good of other people, not for the good of his own ego.
So I want to hear a little bit about this book. What are some of the key topics that you cover?
Well, we talk about this idea of transformative humiliation. How about that?
It doesn't sound fun. I got to be honest with you.
It doesn't sound fun. But you know what? If you think about it, Stone, the times when you learned the most weren't from the moments that you stood on the mountain of glory. It wasn't from a leadership book or a leadership workshop. It's from when you had a humiliating event that kicked your butt and caused you to rethink everything about who you were. When you got your face smushed in it. But when you came out of that experience, you wouldn't want to have to live it again. But I will bet that you are a better human being because you went through that experience, that it transformed you. So Steve Jobs said that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that ever happened to him.
And probably for Apple.
Probably for Apple, it's true, in both directions, right? Like, he needed to get fired from Apple in the first place. And then when he came back, he was much more himself, more grounded, authentic, and seasoned. And maybe a hint less arrogant. As a result. You know, the coach of the Pittsburgh Pirates wrote the foreword to my new book. His name is Clint Hurdle. He has his own wonderful, humiliating story. But he said in the front of the book, he said that he's learned that there's two types of leaders. Those who have been humbled and those who are about to be.
Exactly.
That's pretty insightful, I think.
And that's what this book's about.
Now, are there certain leadership styles or types of leaders that can just really eat an organization inside out, like a cancer?
Yeah, they really can. You know, there's a lot of people here, a lot of people displaying their booths, a lot of people that are experts in the leadership development arena, and they all want to give us their model of the perfect leader. They want to tell us about the leaders, the very functional leader. But the truth is, I think leadership dysfunction is more common than leadership function. And there's two types of leadership dysfunctionality that I've come to see over time. And it's on this scale again, between self-absorption, which is too much confidence, or self-neglect, which is like too much humility. And when you get either one of those conditions, you become one of two different kinds of leaders, and I call them pigheads and weaklings. And a pig head leader is the one that you've seen before, right? It's my way or the highway. It's all about them. Their ego investment is in it. They're big head. They only trust their own input. They make their decisions with nobody else's input. We've seen this kind of obnoxious leader. That said, the other end of the continuum is when you have sort of a leader who's wishy-washy, has no backbone, doesn't support us, says one thing in this room, and then when they go to the other room, sort of capitulate and become invisible and make no results happen. That's that sort of weakling leader. So a weakling or a pig head, either one of those can do great damage in a company, and unfortunately, I think they're kind of common.
Now, for you, when you're kind of working with an organization, how do you begin the engagement? What are the first steps to kind of get the lay of the land, to learn what am I getting myself into? What's the best way to impact change?
Yeah, do you approach it as a pighead or a weakling?
Or do you make everybody get on the roof for the first meeting?
Yes, and put them in their Speedos. Exactly. It's a good question, Lee. I like to come in, and the first thing I want to do is I want to take the pulse before deciding if there's good chemistry between me and the culture of the organization. I'm actually okay if the culture's a little pig-headed-ish.
That's good job security for you, right?
Exactly. And I'm also, you know, it's okay if there are weakling leaders in there, too. In other words, that's the reality of the human condition, right? But what I want to know, I'm going to do a lot of stakeholder interviews, and I want to get a slice of different folks in the organization. I want to definitely speak to the owners or the top-level people in the organization. I want to know what is driving the need for leadership development. Is it succession? Are they wanting to deepen their bench strength? Have they gotten information on surveys that tell them that they're out of alignment with their own value system? I want to understand what's driving the need, but I also want to get a cut not just from the senior leadership. I want to hear from the voice of the people on the ground. What's going on actually in the organization? And then decide from the values level. the stated and the lived values, can I work with these folks and can I make a difference? Do I really think that I'll be able to? Or are they bringing me in as some sort of window dressing? Or are they bringing me in to do the courageous things that they're not courageous enough to do themselves, where I don't think I'll be able to be successful? So it's a upfront stakeholder analysis process. At the end of the day, though, it comes down to a compatibility between my values and their values and whether I think that I'll be able to help them get to where they want to go.
Now, is the first step a lot of time just having them read your books to kind of get an idea of what you're about and what's important to you and to see if it is a good fit from a culture standpoint?
Well, it's definitely good that I want to know their values, and they're going to have to learn about my values too. Because if they're going to, like, my company is a courage building company. If you go to couragebuilding.com, you're going to find my company there. If they can tell me that they want courage, but they're going to have to understand me philosophically, and I can tell them that, but they got to get in my head too. And by reading the books is the best way to do it. And what they'll see is that it's a pretty radical concept, that this is not mealy mouse, vanilla, everyday sort of stuff.
There's no smiley faces and sheets to fill out.
Well, I'm Irish, so there'll be some smiles with my rebelliousness like worked into it. So it's a covert operation sometimes, but they'll at least understand that what we're talking about could have a dramatic change on the organization, and it may mean that people would be courageous not just one way direction, not just downward in the organization, but people might start being more upwardly courageous too, and that may threaten them.
That's right. You can't confuse compliance with courageousness, right?
Exactly. In fact, when you're being courageous, oftentimes, I'll tell you what you can't equate it with. You can't equate it with complacency or apathy, because you don't find courage in comfort. When you're a leader, your job is to make people uncomfortable. Not in a punitive or fear-stoking way, but you got to nudge them into discomfort. So if the organization wants me to come in and help them, inspire them with more courage, they're going to have to set some courageous goals that are going to put everyone, including, maybe most including, the senior leadership, into discomfort before they find their courage.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, the website again?
They can find me at BillTreasurer.com or CourageBuilding.com. So BillTreasurer.com. Or couragebuilding.com, or they can go and find my books. And my new one is A Leadership Kick in the Ass.
And they can go on Amazon or any book.
Exactly. Go to any of your booksellers or online booksellers, and you'll find the book there.
And then your talk this afternoon?
It's on the value of getting humbled. And it's at 1 o'clock, and I'd love to see any of the folks that are in the Atlanta area. Please come by and see my talk.
All right. We'll be back in a few from ATD 2017.
This has been a Special Business Radio X production, brought to you by Training Pros, your source for local learning and development experts. Learn more at training-pros.com.